ya lo hace, pierna derecha, directo al arco, golazo, golazo.
The world of football with a soccer perspective. This is Soccer Today with Dwayne Mullins and Kevin Larame, live on the Sports Podcasting Network.
Good day, good night, and welcome to Soccer Today for Tuesday, May 7th, 2019. I'm Kevin Larame with Dwayne Mullins, as always. Joining us to begin the show today, Abby Mood, managing editor of the Burgundy Waves, to obviously talk about the Colorado Rapids, and Anthony Hudson, and everything else that's going on in the world of football in Colorado. How are you doing, Abby, this morning?
I'm good. Thanks for having me.
No problem, Abby. I guess we'll start with the firing. Obviously, it came on the heels of some fairly negative comments that he made after a loss to Anthony Hudson. How much do you think the firing had to do with those comments, and how much of it was just coming anyway?
I mean, I think it was coming anyway, but I do think that the comments may have tipped the scale and made the decision a little bit easier for the front office. I and a few other people that I spoke with expected them being the front office, to give him maybe another chance at the home game against Vancouver before making a decision. But yeah, I mean, when he starts bad-mouthing the front office, the ownership, even his own players, it's just really not a good look. And I don't know that Porrick Smith and the rest of the front office really had much of a choice at that point.
No, I guess the issue most would have with the comments were saying, you know, what am I supposed to do with these bunch of losers, basically? I mean, I'm paraphrasing,
right.
But he threw them under the bus, the players. But in terms of the front office, is it not fair to Anthony Hudson to say that he might have a point there, that the talent level that was put around him to work with has not been up to snuff to compete in Major League Soccer right now?
Well, I think that's been an issue for the Rapids for years. I mean, after Pablo Mastroianni got fired, I asked Porrick Smith that same question. I asked him, did you ever really give him the players to put a consistent competitive team together? And I was told that they felt that they did. But I think as far as this season and with Anthony Hudson, the part of it that was more surprising was that he brought in most of the guys that he was now calling bottom level group of players. So, I mean, I guess you could give him a little bit of credit in that, no, obviously we don't have the big name DPs. Our DP is in goal, and then we're paying another one, Skelton Gashi, who's not even playing for us anymore. So I think he has an argument to make about that. I just don't know that was the right context or right way to go about it.
It's funny you mention all the acquisition, Abby, because for once I thought the Kellen Acosta trade and the signings and the recruitment this offseason was at least showing a bit more ambitions than usually. Not necessarily showing ambition, but more than Colorado did in the past. And it seems the team didn't gel correctly. Seems like the Kai Kamara and the rest. Not saying there's a locker room problem. No, I'm not going there, Kai Kamara. Don't worry. What I'm just saying is, we all saw the video he posted yesterday. What I'm saying is more, seems like it's trying to put a square peg in a round hole, but across the team. How did you see the offseason with the moves coming in and a certain ambition shown, and then the lack of gelling of that ambition on the pitch?
I thought it was a great offseason. I mean, last year when Anthony Hudson came in, he brought in guys that he had played with or that he'd coached on the New Zealand national team, and some guys from England and different places that had never played in MLS before. So we kind of thought, well, maybe that was it. Maybe it just nothing came together last year because of where all the players came from and all that. So this year, when we saw in the offseason they were bringing in these guys who have been proven in MLS, like, you know, you mentioned Kai Kamara and then Benny Fellhaber, Keegan Rosenberry, Diego Rubio, like it's a decent group of guys. So that's partially where this kind of confusion comes from, in that, what is going on? Like, why can't we win a game when we have these guys who know how to play? They know the league. They're used to the travel and all the other things that are required in MLS. So that's why a lot of fans were calling for Hudson's head, because they figure, well, it must be a coaching issue if these guys can't put some things together and win some games. But I guess that kind of what is TBD right now. Was it a coaching issue, or is it that they don't have the right players?
I've been beating this issue into the ground for the last year and a half, if not 2 years and a half. I just can't even remember anymore. You mentioned his name earlier. Designated player, Tim Howard's goalkeeper. That almost single-handedly sidetracked Zach McMath's career, but that's another issue. Speaking of Tim Howard and the Tim Howard experience is going to end at the end of this season. He already mentioned he was going to retire, and a great career, of course. Man United, Everton, even the beginning with Colorado Rapids was decent. It was their one good season they had over the last few years, but as a whole, with hindsight now a bit, how do we evaluate his DP tenure with the Colorado Rapids, and did he impede the momentum this team seemed to be growing and almost cost this team 2-3 years of maybe success?
Yeah, I think that's a really good question. I mean, overall, he came in with this big Transamerica jersey deal. So a lot of people have discussed about whether the money was tied into that, and you know, a lot of discussion around the money, and you know how MLS is with money, so we may never know the truth. But he did bring a big name and a big face and a big personality to the club, and I think that was something that really at the time back in 2016 kind of propelled things forward. And people were excited about the Rapids, and people were excited to go to games, and then they had a really good season. So coming into the organization, I think everything was really good, really positive. I think after that, it's a little iffy, right? Because he's kind of handcuffing us with one of our DP spots and all this money's tied up in it with him. But at the same time, we've also been told that he was a big factor in getting guys like Kellen Acosta to come to the team. Because if Tim Howard says, yep, we have this culture, you can come in here and make a difference, then people, you know, players are going to trust that. So I think it's been a bit of a mixed bag. But to your point about Zach McMath, I mean, he was doing really well in 2016. He carried the team halfway through that season. So would we have been just as good with McMath? Probably. Would we be just as good with Clint Irwin now? Probably. But I will say that Howard, in my opinion, had a bit of a rough season last year, and he has kind of pulled it together this season despite all the goals that they're letting in. I think that's more reflective on the defense and midfield than on Tim Howard. So I think he's kind of pulling it together for his last year, which is nice to see.
All right. Two points after 10 games. I was pointing out on Friday after the loss that puts them in some pretty bad company in terms of historically bad MLS teams, 2012 PSG, 2013 DC United. You're getting into some places you don't really want to go. Transfer window closes today. It's probably not realistic. There'll be major reinforcements coming in the next 12 hours or so. So what really is the short-term goal of Connor Casey, the interim coach, and the Colorado Rapids as an organization? What needs to happen in the next couple of months?
Well, they need to figure it out with the defense. Last week, after the firing of Hudson was announced, Porg Smith said they were in talks with a few clubs about bringing in reinforcements on the defense, but we haven't heard. There have been no rumors, and we haven't heard anything. So you never know. Something could still happen, but I mean, like you said, I'm not really expecting much to happen over the next 12 hours either. So then Connor Casey has also talked about how he doesn't want to become this defensive team. He wants to be an aggressive team that's scoring goals, which they are scoring goals, which is a nice improvement from last year. But obviously, you know, you can't let in goals on the other end and expect to win games. So they really need to find that balance between being aggressive and pushing forward and scoring goals, but also being able to get back and defend against the attack. And they're just not, and they're making mental mistakes and lack of focus. So there's just, when we talked earlier about the guys gelling and things clicking, it's just not for the defense. And we've tried, well, not we, they've tried multiple different options at center back, and they've tried different formations. In the last couple games, they've tried a 5-back and a 3-back. So we just need to find something consistent that works, and find a center back pairing that works well with the fullbacks, and get it so that they all work together and they know where the other players are going to be, and they kind of get that gel together.
One of the main talking points, themes of Major League Soccer and shows like ours over the past couple of years has been this evolution of the league towards a have and a have not situation, where you are seeing clubs separate themselves from clubs bluntly like Colorado that have been lagging behind. I'm wondering from a Colorado perspective whether you feel that's a fair assessment, that the market is handicapped in that way, and whether or not we are moving towards, you know, MLS whatever 0.0, where you do have this have and have not situation out there.
I think there's a case to be made for that, and it goes back to what Anthony Hudson was arguing about how if you look at Colorado, we don't have the same quality of players as Seattle, Atlanta, as, you know, a lot of the bigger LAFC, a lot of those bigger teams. And I think, like I said before, I think he has a case to make. It just wasn't the right, you know, situation to make that case. But I mean, yeah, if you look at who we have, we did bring in a lot of MLS experienced players, but it's not really big names. Like Kai, you could argue that Kai Kamara is a pretty big name. And he's been doing well and scoring goals and all that stuff. But when you look at the roster as a whole, like, no, like, it goes back to our DP. We have one in goal and one that's not even playing, where other teams have these big name players, whether it's DP or TAM players, that are on the pitch, making a difference, scoring goals, and doing all the things that you would hope that they would do. So I think there is starting to become a bit of a gap. I just don't necessarily think that it should be this extreme in the case of the Rapids this year.
9 points away from the San Jose Earthquakes in seventh position, the last position that gives access to at least a playoff game. Is it too late already, Abby? Is it throwing the white towel in the ring time? Or, like we saw in Major League Soccer, it's never too late. Which one is it?
As much as I hate to say it, I think it's too late for this season. For the playoffs, I think they should there have been some fans talking about focusing on the Open Cup, and we have the Rocky Mountain Cup, which is kind of our little local rivalry with RSL coming up. So there's still some things that are worth fighting for, but I mean, I don't remember what the numbers are and the statistics and all that, and I hate saying, like, you know, we're 10 games in and saying that the playoffs are not going to happen, but I mean, you're right. It would be very, very difficult, and they would need some other teams to tank, which could happen, and them to go on a great winning streak, which again, I guess could happen, but I just don't think it's likely, which is sad.
And the other reason I mentioned San Jose is because, well, Denver and Colorado and San Jose right now are kind of like playing hockey versus each other in the playoffs. So the Sharks or the Avalanche, Abby?
I'm obviously going for the Avalanche, 100%.
All right. Thank you very much for your time, Abby. You can find Abby's work on The Burgundy Wave. She's the managing editor, and you can find her as well on Twitter. Thank you very much for your time, Abby, and hopefully things turn around in the Colorado.
Thanks for having me.
We'll be right back after this short break with DJ Switzer, Wrong Side of the Pond, to talk about, yes, FC Cincinnati and another coach being fired.
You are listening to Soccer Today. Follow us on Twitter at Soccer Today SPN and like our Facebook page, facebook.com/ Sport Podcasting Network. You can find the podcast version of all the shows we do on iTunes, Apple Podcast, Google Play Store, TuneIn Radio, iHeartRadio, and anywhere you get your podcast.
And we're back on Soccer Today. Kevin Laramie with Dwayne Rollins. DJ Switzer joining us in a moment. Just trying to get him on the line as we speak. But yeah, busy time, Dwayne. And I don't remember coaches being fired like this almost 2-3 days apart. Well, or a week apart like this.
It could be a reflection of that, what we sort of like spoke to with Abby, that kind of new evolution of the league, the MLS, whatever 0.0, where, you know, there is greater sort of attention put on results, basically, like any other league in the world. But this one just caught me a little off guard. You know, we'll ask DJ when we get him on the line what exactly is going on down there and whether there's more to the story than we think. But this breaks the record. This is the shortest reign by a expansion team manager before he was fired. So, you know, Bryce Peter Thornton, Whitecaps coach who came from USL, just like Koch came from USL. A lot of similarities because they both came from the Whitecaps organization too, right? So there's a lot going on there. It's a strange one to me. And obviously he made similar comments on the weekend to Anthony Hudson, maybe not quite as aggressive, but sort of saying, you know, we're not good enough. And I'm wondering whether that might have been, you know, management saying, well, if you don't think you're good enough, you might as well move on because clearly you've given up. And look, yeah, we need to talk to DJ about this because I don't really understand why an expansion team coming in from Cincinnati's perspective, where they're coming from, would be so quick on the trigger.
Yeah, no, I exactly. So I'm just getting DJ on the line in a few minutes. Hopefully it's trying to connect here. But I'm just like you, Dwayne. I'm wondering what happened. And is it because of the comments that he mentioned? We'll see if that is the case. But it is, for me, a bit disappointing because we do see the Canadian connection as well with FC Cincinnati, the goalkeeper coach Dax Stern. I'm kind of wondering and hopeful that he keeps his employment going into the future, especially for next year. I think he's a very promising goalkeeper coach. So, no, there's a lot of things to dissect in this move.
Yeah, well, Addy made comments too, which were sort of dismissive of the coaching, and I'm wondering whether the inmates are running the asylum a little bit here, right? So he sort of said, yeah, we have all these players playing our position, and no one can be expected to perform at their maximum expectation if they're playing at a position. Well, you know, with all due respect to the way that they built that roster, we all saw this coming. We were talking about how many defensive midfielders they had in the offseason. We were talking about how weird the build was that they were making, the fact that they're spending, you know, what, a gazillion dollars in allocation for God bless, right? There were questions about this build all the time. And I do hear DJ's on the line, so we might as well just jump right in with him. Hi, DJ, how are you doing?
Not too bad about you guys.
Pretty good. DJ Switzer, wrong side of the pond. What is your first reaction about 59 minutes ago, a bit more now, when it was announced that Alan Koch was dismissed of his position as manager of FC Cincinnati?
No, it's a great question, Kevin, and one that really didn't catch us all by that much surprise. There's actually been kind of a growing discontent within the squad over the last few weeks, and I've actually learned that discontent stretches all the way back to preseason as well. And really, the intensity on Koch has really ramped up over the last few weeks with the negative results the team has experienced. And unfortunately, that's left him in a position where he's now out of a job.
And if we look at the standings, just not necessarily to look at the way they are, but more the record here, 11 games played, 2 wins, 2 draws, 7 losses. And it started a bit well for FC Cincinnati. They had a win on the road quite early in their history. But you mentioned the discontent. Where do you think it all stems from?
So this is obviously an expansion side that's been kind of hastily constructed. There's been a lot of talk about FC Cincinnati having the shortest run-up ever for an MLS expansion side to build their team. And there are certainly elements of that that are true. But a big part of it was they had to build this squad to begin with. And when you do that, you usually go about building a squad with some sort of system in mind. So as you recruit the players, you could say things to them along the lines of, hey, we'd really love for you to play in this particular role. Do you want to come and be a part of that? Well, after the team, at least the way that we've heard it, was smashed by Columbus in their final preseason match, the players apparently revolted, saying they weren't playing the system that they were brought in to play in, and that the team quickly adjusted in the aftermath to that. And we saw them unveil a completely new system in that opening loss to Seattle on their first ever MLS game. But then the team quickly found some results. They got the draw away to Atlanta. They got a win over Portland, their first ever MLS home match. And then you'd mentioned a minute ago the win at New England as well. So this team is capable of producing decent results, including a 1-1 draw at home with Sporting Kansas City. But they've just not produced on the scale that anyone would have hoped them to.
Well, okay. They haven't produced on the scale that anyone would have hoped that they do in Cincinnati, but is it realistic that they should be producing on a scale more than they're doing right now as an expansion team coming in, as you say, with such a short run-in?
Yeah, I mean, that's also a really good question to ask. And I think when you look at the way this team was constructed, they originally had 11 of the former USL players, and that does include a Fernando Adi and a Fatai Olache, who were probably above the average player or well above the average player in USL. But they had 11 of them on the squad when the team was originally built. And if you look for parallels to other MLS squads that have built in a similar fashion, Minnesota most recently, Orlando prior to that, that strategy doesn't tend to work very well. And it usually is one that conveys that there's not a ton of money for them to actually spend and go out and get some of the bigger name players. FC Cincinnati are not in a market where they can go out and spend like an Atlanta can or an LAFC can, and they have to rely on smaller budgets. So when you looked at this team as it was constructed, it was hard to say, yeah, this team's going to be really successful. But the team parroted, at least general manager and team president Jeff Birding, parroted that this team would be competitive and would actually compete for the playoffs in their first year. So while there were many of us who kind of expected that this wouldn't go very well, or not necessarily them being the best team, the results are falling short of expectations, and the team didn't help themselves in setting up those expectations.
Those outside onlookers questioned the build in the offseason. I'm not sure. I think that you were higher on it, people in Cincinnati, as you should be. You know, when you're close to it, right? And you want it to be successful, and you tend to see the positive. That's human nature. But from outside perspective, you looked at the amount of defensive midfielders that were being brought in. You looked at moves like the Nick Hagelin move, and you questioned it. And there was a lot of question about the roster build. How much was Koch involved in that roster build? How much was he responsible for it? And how much does the remaining front office staff have to answer to that build and how it was designed?
Yeah, so Koch definitely had a hand in building this first squad. From what I've been told, due to the success that he had with the USL team last year, which, by the way, was one of the most highly paid squads in that entire league, they gave a little bit more of the reins to Koch than what might have been given to a typical manager. Now, that said, there is a technical director at the club, Luke Sassano, formerly of the New York Cosmos, has been with the team now for about a year, and he was certainly involved in that process as well. The question is how much were each of them involved in that process? And furthermore, how much was former, club president and team general manager Jeff Birding, how much was he involved in that process? Birding's experience in soccer is pretty limited. He had worked in the NFL prior to this job, never in player management for that matter. So this is definitely new territory for him too. And I think if you look at the equation of all three of those involved, it's impossible to not lay some of the blame at each of their feet. How much blame should be laid at each feet, that's a little unclear. But it is certain that each of them played a role in the construction of the team that we have now.
I have been browsing the hashtag FCC over the last few days. And I have to say, DJ, and this weekend especially, I was quite shocked by what I was reading. Fans saying, yeah, I miss the USL. I miss being in the league where it doesn't matter. We were on top of the league easily, and now we're just a small fish in a bigger pond. Is the jump higher than fans anticipated? We know the jump is not easy, but are the fans surprised by how difficult this is according to the reactions? It's interesting, at least.
Yeah, no, it's definitely a very interesting reaction. And I think Cincinnati as a sports town is a tricky town for a lot of people to have to deal with. We look at some of our other sports franchises, particularly the professional ones in the Reds and Major League Baseball and the Bengals and the NFL. And neither of those teams has a tremendous track record, at least in recent history. And Cincinnati is a very fickle sports town because of that. It's tough to keep people's attention spans and to keep people happy when losing results are what have become the norm. And so the last few years, FC Cincinnati has had this meteoric rise, almost unexplainable, as I've said to you guys before. But the other aspect of this is it's been a pretty winning team to this point. And so the city has really latched on to the club because it's provided an outlet for wins that the other professional sports franchises have not done. So when you've gone through 3 years of pretty good success, this drastic change to a squad that's underperforming, that's near the bottom of the league, has been a pretty tough pill for the Cincinnati sports fan to swallow. And it's unfortunate in some respects, but it's really manifesting itself in a bad way, where people are kind of reverting right back to the Cincinnati way of supporting their sports teams, where once they go bad, let's start bashing them. And it's kind of unfair, I think, in some respects, to FCC. Some people have kind of lost sight of the fact, and I think a couple of those good results at the beginning of the year did well to erase that. They lost sight of the fact that this is an expansion team, and outside of recent history with LAFC and Atlanta United, who have vastly different resources, most expansion teams tend to struggle out of the gates.
You mentioned the 3 years of basically nonstop growth for FC Cincinnati in its fan base and its attendances and its record for biggest crowd in the USL and the USL championships. And so when we look at the growth and the nonstop growth of the club since its inception in USL, and this is maybe the first adversity the club versus its fan base it's living, is there a chance that first adversity already makes the fan base a bit more timid when it comes to attending games or supporting the club? We've seen big crowd already, but is there a risk here of maybe some fans with a lack of patience already moving on from FC Cincinnati, unfortunately?
I think that's always a risk, no matter the sports team and no matter the city. But Cincinnati is certainly one that's prone to that. If you go to Cincinnati Reds games over the last couple seasons, there have been some pretty bad numbers as far as attendances have been concerned. So this is a town that's not foreign to the idea of turning their back on a team that's underperforming or not meeting the expectations that they've set for them. So it's definitely a concern. And I think this weekend, when FC Cincinnati return after a three-match road trip, it'll be really interesting to see what type of numbers we're going to see out in the stands. Is there going to be an immediate reaction to the kind of negative run that the team is experiencing right now? So that's definitely something that I think a lot of us in the city are keeping an eye on, is what kind of impact will this type of result have, or this type of form, will it have a negative impact on the team's long-term prospects? I don't think we're quite to the territory where we need to be really worried about it, but I think it's a question worth asking.
All right, before I jump in with my last two questions, I will, for any Cincinnati fans listening out there, I'll give you a little bit of positive news. I saw Emery Walshman, your lone player, play at Hamilton, and he absolutely was dominant out there. So there's something positive for you, obviously at a lower level, but nonetheless, something to hold on to maybe for today, and he might come back at one point. But DJ, we had Abby Mood on from the Burgundy Wave to talk about the Colorado situation just before you today, and she'd already been booked, obviously, a similar situation with the coach getting fired. And I asked her a couple questions that I'm going to also ask you. First off, I'm going to ask you about the short-term prospects. Team has 8 points. It is an expansion team. There is obviously some roster composition issues here. What realistically do you think the short-term goal of FC Cincinnati is? Do you still feel that with the coaching tweak, you can get competitive for a playoff spot in what has turned out to be kind of a weird East this year? Or is this more of a build towards 2020 sort of situation?
Yeah, man, I wish it was an easy, straightforward answer, but I do think that there's a couple different layers to this. The first layer is, this squad has some talent within it. I think you look at it, it's not necessarily a complete squad, but they're definitely not a five matches without a goal type squad that they're currently showing themselves to be. So I think there's the opportunity, particularly, as you said, in this kind of crazy East that we have this year, for FC Cincinnati to turn things around and potentially scrape their way into a playoff spot. I don't know that they're going to see any sort of advancement if they make it into the playoffs, but I do think that's a goal that could potentially be within the realm of possibilities. The real question, though, becomes how quickly are they going to reset expectations and manage those expectations? Honestly, I don't know that aiming for the playoffs this year is necessarily the wisest thing. Maybe it would be better for the club to say, hey, look, you know, we were a little overly ambitious. Give us a year, much in the way that Minnesota kind of owned the early mistakes that they made and said, let us build and take some time to get this squad ready and maybe have a squad in a year or two that would be competitive. That I'm not really sure of right now. And I think the manager that they end up appointing could go a long way to explaining what approach they're going to take to that.
And you sort of mentioned off the top, you look at LAFC, you look at the Atlanta United, and a lot of people take those and take those examples and say, oh, well, expansion teams should come in and be championship contenders right away, that they just have to sign, you know, a couple big end-name players and away we go. Obviously, Cincinnati is at a bit of a different level, just like Colorado, who we were talking about before, obviously an older team, a 96 team, but still at that same level. So I'll ask you, again, the same question I wrapped up with Abby with, is that are we truly in an era in MLS where there are divides that are going to be very difficult for the smaller markets to catch up on? Are we really in a situation where there's going to be a split in the league? And if there is Cincinnati going to be maybe like the Reds, sort of stuck in that sort of purgatory where you have to have everything go right to be a championship team?
FC Cincinnati certainly can look to a couple other markets to find hope and being a competitive side. You look at a city like Kansas City and Sporting KC and the success they've had for the relative size of their markets. They've proven that small clubs can do this on a budget and be competitive on a regular basis. And I think FC Cincinnati would do well to model what Sporting Kansas City have done. I do think there is a divide that is growing, and particularly so when you look at these clubs like Atlanta United, who have come in and haven't had to finance their own cost of building a stadium. They have a billionaire owner who has ambition. Those are the type of things that really, unless your city has that already and waiting for you and your ownership group are ready to go, that are real things to contend with. Now, I think a club like FC Cincinnati, once they get their own stadium built and they stabilize their revenue streams a little bit, they may be able to compete in a way that would be a little bit better. So I'm not ready to say that there's a complete divide yet and that there's no way for these small clubs to moneyball their way into success. But it is an uphill battle and something that we're going to have to keep a particularly close eye on as the league potentially loosens up their roster rules, expands the cap, and potentially gets rid of some of the limiting factors and unique mechanisms that we see in MLS for acquiring players.
In closing, DJ, looking to the future, looking ahead, what type of manager, if you can, even maybe using example of names, if there's some coming to mind, would you want FC Cincinnati to appoint? Would you want someone that the fan base knows the name? There's a few good coaches out there with MLS experience that could be called. Or would you want someone from outside, someone with a resume, a curriculum vitae of success in other leagues and bringing him here? What type of profile would you see their second MLS manager to be?
Yeah, I what I really want to see this team do is build out in a methodical fashion. There are times where this team has seemed to have been built with a plan in mind, but it really seems like it's been a kind of rough shot, and that comes with the time that it takes to put together an expansion team. When you don't have a long run-up, it's difficult to actually build and plan and get the pieces that you need to achieve that plan. But I do really want to see a manager that has a clearly defined system. What we've seen over the last few weeks with FC Cincinnati and MLS is that they've switched formations. They've gone with different player personnel. They've been searching for an answer. And I need a manager to come in and find an answer to the problems that they're trying to solve with this squad right now. As far as managers, if I could pick one, it's a shame that Bob Bradley is not available. I think he's the type of system manager that would find success in these type of settings, but he's also proving he can do it with more resources as well. So obviously that's not going to be one that would happen, but what type of manager they bring in could very well be what shapes all of this. And I could see FC Cincinnati going for a smarter domestic manager, but I could also very easily see them going with a bigger name that catches attention and gets the fan base invigorated, whether or not that big name, and I've heard several of them linked, some of which have Premier League experience. Would those be the right answers? I don't know, especially with a general manager and president who doesn't have a long history in the sport and a great familiarity with it. I just don't know that would potentially be the right answer, especially when you look at some of the track records for some of these managers that have come in from other leagues and the success they may or may not had. So it's going to be a tough appointment. It's not an easy situation, regardless of who they get. And I'm hesitant to say that there's one singular answer for their needs at this point.
DJ Switzer, Wrong Side of the Pond, thank you very much for your time today on short notice. It's going to be a busy day, a busy couple of days, I'm sure, for the blog and the podcast. But thank you very much, DJ, for your time today, and hope for the best for the future.
Not a problem, guys. Thanks for having me back on.
We'll be right back after this break for, yes, the first ever Canadian Premier League Player of the Week and the Young Player of the Week announcement coming up after this break.
You are listening to Soccer Today. Follow us on Twitter at @SoccerTodaySPN and like our Facebook page, facebook.com/Sports Podcasting Network.
And we're back on Soccer Today. Dwayne, it's a momentous occasion. It is the first ever North American Soccer Reporters Canadian Player, well, Canadian Premier League Player of the Week, which is it's a long sentence, but it's a first today.
Yeah, for those who don't know, North American Soccer Reporters is the umbrella organization that acts as an advocacy group for those that cover the game in Canada, the United States, but also more to the fans' importance. Is the group that awards the MLS Player of the Week. It's a vote for anyone who covers it, who's a member of the organization, has a vote for second, third. Gets calculated, there's your winner. We sometimes joke that it's the Brace of the Week Club, which tends to be true.
Well, but I'll let you say it. It is what it is. But first of all, if you are a colleague listening to us right now and you do write, cover Major League Soccer or cover soccer in North America and are part of the North American Soccer Reporters Association, please contact Dwayne if you would like to vote for the Canadian Premier League Player of the Week as well. But Dwayne, you're the one behind this award, and I'll let you with the honors.
Yeah, and if anyone wants to sign up to be a voter, I'm going to give you my work email, which is Dwayne, D-U-A-N-E, .R-O-L-L-I-N-S @crmdynamics.ca. And if you want to buy a CRM system, tell me as well, because I'll get a commission on that. That'd be fun. Anyway.
Shameless plug.
All right, so our player of the week is from Forge FC, the scorer of Forge's first ever goal. Also scored in the second game, the current Golden Boot leader, Kevin, it's Kendall Thomas. He is
the brace of the
first
week.
Player of the week.
The brace of the week.
Exactly. Scored two goals. League One.
Yeah, well deserved. Great play. Another player we anticipated to score off the bat, but well, two goals in. Golden Boot after a week. Player of the week.
And he had Petrasso was second in the voting for those that are interested in such things. But it was a narrow win, but more first place votes. He had three first place votes, Thomas. So he is our first player of the week there. So there you go. We also have a young player of the week. This is to reflect the mandate of the Canadian Premier League to sort of support young players. It also, I felt, was a way to pretty much guarantee that there will be a Canadian named every week. I didn't want to have a Canadian of the week because there's so many Canadians in the league that seemed a little redundant, but I felt that by having a young player that you would be almost effectively doing that. There are a couple eligible under 23 players that are international, and if they win them, so be it. But our first Canadian Premier League young player of the week is Noah Verhoeven. From the Pacific FC, who was an absolute spark horse. One of the glowing lights of the first week. It's like, why? What the hell did the Whitecaps were thinking? Why did they let this guy go?
Yeah. Who's assessing talent over there? But no, Noah Verhoeven with an assist on a great goal and showing that the young players for Pacific FC are not just here to take part. They're here to take over. And that's what they're doing in the Van House.
I think, Kevin, sorry, Kevin, I think that, and most of our conversation, for those that we repeat it every week, but it bears repeating again, on patreon.com, so it's Sports Podcasting Network, $2 a month or more, we'll get you the Few Solitudes soccer podcast, which is every Thursday, which is primarily focused on the Canadian Premier League. We go in depth on that show. But we will, I think, make this a feature every Tuesday, because that is when these come out to tell you what the players of the week are, and then sort of use that as a promotion for Two Solitudes as well. So if you want to hear our details on our thoughts on the weekend's games, for sure listen on Thursday. But, real quickly, Kevin, I think the league has to be pretty happy on one front, and I'll leave it at this today, it seems like there's going to be some parity in the league. And it's not artificially created. I mean, there is a bit of a cap, so they're kind of spending the same amount of money, but
it's talent related.
It seems a little more organic.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Everyone, yeah, it's organic. Yeah.
Yeah, and there's no blowouts. I was a little worried for Halifax, and they went and won. So yep. There you go. And I think travel is going to be a major factor in the league, and that's something to keep an eye on.
We'll talk about the nitty and gritty of the league on Thursday, but here's the news for my friends in Halifax. Derek Martin, president, owner, CEO of the Sports and Entertainment Atlantic, owner of the Wanderers, already mentioned that a stadium expansion is possible between the two seasons this year. Already crowd capacity on Saturday, and you can see the stadium having more than close to 7,000, now maybe all the way up to 10, and the stadium improvement already in the talks after week one of the Canadian Premier League.
And look, you know what I was thinking of when I was seeing that little stadium, but that in the Pacific one, it reminded me a lot of St. George Park in St. John's, where Canada, of course, qualified for the World Cup for the one and only time in 1985.
Yeah, the game in 95, yeah. In 85, yeah.
Yeah, these stadiums are a little bit nicer in the sense that they're more contained, but they're sort of that small and compact, and you can fill it with Canadian fans. And yes, the numbers are smaller, but the intensity was there. I would love to see the national teams, particularly in the Nations League games. I suspect that they'll play the USA game probably in Toronto or Vancouver, but the other ones, put them out there. Put them in CanPL stadiums. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, that would be just great to see. And I have to say, the look of all the different stadiums, the familiarity of the look of it, feels like I was watching the championship a bit, you know? And it feels like I was playing FIFA with the lower leagues, but in the romantic way, in the beautiful way. And it is the beautiful game after all. And we finally have a league of our own. Two Solitudes Soccer Podcast. Every Thursday is $2 a month, 50 cents a week, 50 cents a show. At least with extra coverage of the Canadian Premier League will be found on our Patreon account. Dwayne and I, if we feel the need to write on the beautiful game in our beautiful country, we will do so, but for patrons only. And you can find the way to become a patron in the description below, or just go to patreon.com/sportspodcastnetwork. And as always, you can follow Dwayne at 24th Minute, myself at Kev Larmé. Thanks to Abby Mood of the Burgundy Wave, managing editor, for joining us today. Thanks to DJ Switzer, managing editor of The Wrong Side of the Pond, covering FC Cincinnati. Thank you to both of you for joining us today to talk about a similar situation of your coach being fired. And as always, you can find the podcast version of this show anywhere you get your podcast. But until tomorrow, as always, have a great soccer.
You can find the podcast version of all the shows we do on iTunes, Apple Podcast, Google Play Store, TuneIn Radio, iHeartRadio, and anywhere you get your podcast.